I am joined here today with Richard Smothers. Hey, Richard.
How you doing, man?
So you're a former porn star,
Yes.
and you probably get this a lot, but a lot of porn stars, they came up with porn names, but your name sort of Dick Smothers. You sort of had like the perfect porn name.
Well, it's funny, John Stewart, when I was getting a little bit of media attention, John Stewart on the air said, Dick Smothers Jr., or he goes, best porn name ever, Dick Smothers Jr. And I felt rather flattered by that, but it was kind of unfortunate, actually. I didn't decide to go with my real name because my first name is Dick. I went with my real name because I wanted media attention, you know, for doing it. And, you know, it wasn't like I was going to change my name to, like, you know, I don't know, Kyle Wood or, you know, one of those things like that. You know, but there, I mean, I wasn't, my primary motive was to actually, you know, was try to capitalize on the association with my father. So, because I knew, you know, I knew I could. So it was kind of like, you know, I wasn't just like, oh, I think I'll be in porn. You know, that seems like a good job. It's like, if that's all that it was, I wouldn't have done it. You know, I guess that's pretty crass. That's kind of an impure motivation, but you know.
That wasn't your main dream in life, is to be a porn star since you were a kid?
No. When I was real little, I wanted to be a paleontologist because I like dinosaurs. Then I wanted to be a marine biologist because I wanted to discover a sea monster. And then when I started playing music when I was 14, then I wanted to be a rock musician. And that's pretty much what I tried to do from then until, you know, economic reality set in around the age of, you know, 30. And it wasn't like I stopped playing music, but I was no longer, you know, counting on it. I wasn't one of these guys that was like, you know, I can't work a real job because I have to put everything into my music. It's like, you know, I got to eat. So, you know, if it happens, it happens. But, you know, I don't have anyone taking care of me or subsidizing me. And I wasn't going to go the route of, you know, finding a girlfriend that would take care of me who I could keep bullshitting and, you know, who would, you know, support me because she's stupid enough to be convinced that her boyfriend's definitely going to wind up being a rock star.
So you're saying that, I mean, even though your dad was rich, he didn't necessarily give you all this money.
Well, the thing was, he was rich for a time, but he was kind of more like a guy, he didn't take that and then say, all right, I'm going to take this money now and make it work for me and things like that. Or I'm going to, he was more like, he just, you know, and he told me this. He says, you know, when it was happening, it just seemed like it was going to keep rolling in forever, you know? So he didn't think like that. You'll see some guys that when the money comes in, they start investing it, you know? They buy businesses or start businesses, or they get involved in other ancillary activities in the entertainment business, like producing, things like that, being involved in other aspects of it that can make money for them if they are no longer a hot commodity. You know what I mean? But my father really, really didn't think like that. And they had attained a high enough altitude when they were big so that they were able to glide for quite some time. You know, so he wasn't really interested. He had his gig. But outside of it, I mean, he wasn't like someone who, he wasn't an actor, really. He did some acting gigs, but he wasn't into acting. He didn't, you know, pursue being an actor. They were a musical comedy act, but, I mean, he wasn't a musician in that sense, and that, you know, he wanted to make albums or, you know, have a solo career or anything like that either. So he was rich for a time by most people's standards, sure. But... you know, it didn't, not forever. So and it wasn't one of those things. We weren't really a family where, you know, I mean, I had to do chores when I was a kid, and we lived a middle class existence for the most part. We didn't have maids. You know, I didn't get a BMW when I was 16. You know what I mean? I didn't have a credit card or anything like that. I got an allowance, and if I did something bad, they kept my allowance from me, you know, just like normal kids, you know, or optimally. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I saw a lot of kids that, you know, to be frank, they were spoiled, but they led, you know, their parents weren't rich or celebrities or anything like that. So that wasn't anything that I could count on. Now, my mother had died when I was 22. And so I inherited a little bit of money from her. You know, she had insurance policy and some other things like that. So I in part supported my attempt at a musical career with that. But, you know, that didn't last forever. And that wasn't something that I could have lived off for the rest of my life. So, you know, at a certain point, I had to get a job, you know.
And you were pretty young at the peak of your father's career.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. I mean, they peaked in like 1968. You know what I mean? I was five. You know, so it wasn't a lot. You know, I wasn't like, all right, I'm going to go out and be a five-year-old, you know, rock star, you know?
How much of an influence did your father have on you?
In what sense? If you could be more specific.
Okay, I would say the creative sense.
Well, my father wasn't really, he was a performer. He wasn't a creator. So he wasn't really responsible for the writing and things like that. So I'd have to say not at all. My uncle is more of that type. He was a big part of the writing. He was the show was his baby in a big way. He was the executive producer. He was there in the editing bay, you know. The creative end of things were my father wasn't really involved so much. And now I wasn't privy to every session they had. I'm sure he made his contributions. But for the most part, I mean, you have really great violinists in the world, right? They don't write anything, though. You know what I mean? They're performers, you know. Not every musician, dancer, singer, actor really is an artist in that sense. A lot of them are just performers, and that's what my father was. He was a performer.
Would you view yourself as purely a performer, or have interest in the other aspects like writing and that?
Oh well, I started writing my own stuff as soon as I started playing music. I began playing music when I was 14, and I started having my own band. So yeah, I played original music for most of my musical endeavors have been original endeavors, and I've been the key writer, sometimes the exclusive writer. So as far as that goes, yeah, definitely. I like to be able to perform what I create. You know what I mean? Kind of like an actor, you know, starring in a movie that he wrote. And got to direct as well. You know what I mean? I like creating my own character and having my own voice and putting my own preferences out there. There have been times when I've performed in cover bands, and it just really hasn't been very rewarding. I was involved in a cover band that was actually very successful. I mean, as far as making money and booking gigs and things like that.
Are you talking about Kamikaze?
No, Kamikaze was original from the get-go. Kamikaze was never a cover band, ever. I mean, when I first started off, we played the odd cover or two, but as soon as we had enough original songs, we never played another cover. So that was never like a top 40 band or anything like that. I mean, we always played, Kamikaze was always an original band. I was in a cover band when I was like 18 and went out on the road and we got booked through these Best Western hotels that were owned by a corporation through the Southwest, and you know, and those were like 2 weeks at each place, 6 nights a week, 5 sets a night, playing covers. And I was in a cover band the first cover band I was in, I played bass and sang, did some of the lead vocals and played bass. And then this band that I was in a few years ago, was actually a franchise 80s tribute band that I did just did vocals in it. But I didn't like the work environment at all. The thing is the attitude from the company that created the franchises and booked them and stuff like that, I just felt was very, I didn't like it. It was a corporate mentality. You're an employee. You're going to go here. You're going to do what we tell you to do. You can be replaced. And I was like, and I got to a point, you know, I mean, I did the job great, but it's like when you couple that with something that you're not totally into, it's like, what's the reward? Wow, I can make a living at it, but I can make a living working a regular job, and I don't have to work nights and weekends, and I get health insurance, you know, and I have somebody go, good job, thanks for helping me make money, rather than acting like they're doing me a favor. So finally, after a while of them telling me, you know, you can be replaced, well, then fuck you, replace me. Good luck with that, you know. Let me equate this to my time in porn. If there's something that you used to like, but then suddenly it becomes an obligation and a job, you don't like it so much anymore. You know what I mean? And it kind of turns you off to it. Like, if I'm going to just make a living, then I want to do something that I can rely on, you know, that I can just show up for work in the morning, go home at night, and know that I'm going to make, you know, X amount. You know, the thing is with singing, Jesus, if you're sick, you don't get a sick day. You know, you got to go out on that stage and you're not going to be as good as you can be. And especially if you're doing a bunch of songs, you know, if you're doing songs you don't like, you know, things like that. And then you got to do them four nights a week. It's just like, try having to listen to a song, perform a song you don't like over and over and over and over again. There are some guys, I guess, that are so, let's call a spade, insecure, narcissistic, that all they care about is being in front of people and getting attention. That's not what it's about for me. I want to be getting attention for doing something that I like, and that I feel confident in.
Is there a particular song you really disliked you had to do over and over and over again?
Oh, Jesus, fucking Karma Chameleon. There were a bunch of them. I had to do fucking Oh, Mickey. You know, I mean, there were a lot of songs I didn't like. And then, you know, and then you just wait and then you look at the set list and you'd be like, okay, all right, here comes, you know, and then there's a song you really like. You know what I mean? Oh, thank God for that. And then you're back to something else you don't like.
So what are your favorite songs you performed?
With that band, I like anything by Duran Duran. I love Duran Duran. I love doing Relax by Frankie Goes to Hollywood. That was a killer song. Love that.
You know what's funny is I've done karaoke before, and I've done Relax. I'm an amateur. I'm not as good as you are, but I've done Relax, and I've done some Duran Duran.
Right on. You know, I have my own. When I do karaoke, I like doing Girls on Film. What I really love is Bowie. We didn't do any Bowie in this band, which sucked. I do China Girl. I kick China Girl's ass. I do Beds Are Burning by Midnight Oil. Love that song. What else I do? Oh, I sing the shit out of Wicked Game. Love that song. Chicks love that song. I love that song. Great song. But,
so it's mostly 80s.
It was an 80s tribute band. So what it was is they called it an era tribute. So as opposed to being a tribute to a particular band, it was a tribute to an era. So we had a shtick. You know, we dressed like Revenge of the Nerds, you know, so the glasses with the Band-Aid in the middle and, you know, and goofy choreography and things like that. And it was, I'll tell you what, it went over really well for the crowds, you know, because if you're going to do a cover band, the thing is, all people care about are the songs. They just want to hear songs they like and songs they know, you know. And from the first gig we ever did with that band, the crowd loved it. We had great audiences. They danced every song. They sang every song. It was a no-brainer. It really was, you know. So they had they definitely knew what they were doing when it comes to putting these things together and marketing them. And, you know, they were able to book their bands through, they like had territory. So there were bands that were basically identical to us that had the same set list and the same choreography. And the company provided the backing tracks, you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, the backing vocals and synthesizers and stuff like that, you know, That was all provided. It was a franchised operation. They booked the bands, and so they had them in different territories, you know. And what they would do is, if a guy was going to take some time off, they'd make a guy from one of the other ones. They'd fly him over and have him sub, you know, for the guy. So it was a very, it was a completely corporatized endeavor, completely, which I don't. Which philosophically I don't object to. I mean, if what you're trying to do is make money, but it was just the attitude. I didn't like the attitude. And who I wound up playing with inevitably were other guys around my age who didn't make it. You know what I mean? They were in bands in the '80s and they didn't make it, or they had kind of made it, but it was gone. And so there was, with a lot of them, some of them were really cool. But with a lot of them, there was like this chip on their shoulder, you know what I mean? And I just thought that would, I mean, I'm guilty of reckless integrity. I don't mask my contempt, right? So I'm just like, you know, the guy, you know, some guy starts getting attitude, we're in a fucking cover band, right? So essentially we're a jukebox. I'm like, dude, get the fuck over yourself, man. I'm like, you could be anybody. They don't care who you are. I go, they don't even know who you are. Once you take those glasses, your getup off, you could walk out the audience. They wouldn't even recognize you. So,
would you say that the porn industry has that same kind of corporate mentality?
No. Actually, there are corporations within the porn industry, but it depends on who you're working for. There are a lot of true independents in porn. There really are. There are guys that do things their own way, and as long as their stuff, I mean, if they have their own line, they get to pretty much do things however they want, the way they want. And if they found their audience, then it's kind of like a band finding its audience, you know, like, I don't know, like Ed Powers. Ed Powers is a brand. It has a brand and a thing, and it is Dirty Debutantes, and there are people that like this Dirty Debutantes. And it's, I would liken the porn industry less to the film industry and more to the publishing industry, because really what you're doing is you're putting out publications. You know what I mean? They want to see, the rule of thumb is you got to have at least 4 titles and you put out 1 a month. You know what I mean? So there's a branded identity. So when it's Dirty Debutantes, what you're seeing is first timers. So that's what those guys like. So Ed's going to put out a Dirty Debutante every month. You know what I mean? And they're waiting for the next one to come out. Or it could be, you know, Anal Gangbang, you know, 5 through 75, you know, or, you know, teenage black chicks screwing midgets. You know what I'm saying? It becomes very specific, just like the magazine industry. You got Guns and Ammo. You got High Times. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of how, what I noticed, but that was what it looked like more to me. It resembled the publishing industry much more than the film industry. You know, even though they did put out, you know, features, but you're still following formats for the most part. You want 6 sex scenes. You don't want to go longer than 10 minutes of dialogue or 5 minutes of dialogue. And the ones that I did, it was basically like this: 5 minutes of dialogue, 10 minutes of sex, 5 minutes of dialogue, 10 minutes of sex. Make sure there's one girl scene, one anal scene, you know, and it was very, formatted that way.
And
but,
it changed because in the past, porns were like a whole movie, but now it's on, because of the internet, it's all about like short 5 to 10 minute clips.
Well, it's something, you know what it is? It's something for someone to jack off to, you know? So if you look at 70s porn, they were trying to make movies with sex scenes in them. They're not that good to jack off to, though, because you don't have 10 minutes of straight sex. I mean, sometimes it'll go pretty quick. Positions will change quick. Angles will change. You know what I mean? And it became more of a, it really was, from what I've seen in the 70s, those features were more people trying to make movies with sex in them. Now, they, for the most part, they wound up being bad movies. I mean, really, bad acting and, you know, things like that. But they were trying. You know, they weren't, there was no format to follow. There was, and but they also made a lot more money too, because I mean, you know how it works, right? You, people didn't have VCRs or anything. Well, how a movie works is a theater pays you. They kind of rent your movie. They don't buy it from you. They got to pay you. And as long as that movie was in that porno theater and guys were showing up to watch it, they kept paying you to keep running that movie. So it became perennial for a lot of them. like Devil and Miss Jones and stuff, was at movie houses for years, and they're making money every month off of that thing. And that, we all know that changed. So, you know, I mean, it's and there were good things about it, and there were bad things about it, obviously. I mean, if you want to jack off to porn, do you really want to drive downtown and go to a theater? And you got, I mean, the movie starts at 7, and you got to put a trench coat over your lap and shit
are
like
you,
that. I mean, you know.
Are you old enough to remember going to those places?
No, I wasn't. I never went to any of those places. They were still around when I was old enough, but it had already been, you know, porn had already been coming out on video for a while when I was that old enough. So I was like, I don't really want to do that. I mean, you know, I would have thought about maybe it might be kind of fun to go with a girl and have her suck my dick while we're watching a porno. But even then, I mean, it's kind of, I'm in a room full of, dark room full of people I don't even know. They're all guys, and they're, you know, just guys always jerking off and stuff. And in all likelihood, it's probably not going to be very clean. And, you know, so from a fantasy standpoint, yeah, but nah, didn't really appeal to me. I think video is the best thing ever. The best thing that ever happened to pornography, probably. For the user, anyway. You know what I mean?
So
it's a private thing. That's the thing. It really is, generally speaking. It's a private thing. It's like taking a shit, man. I don't want anyone to see you jack it off, you know? Do you? I mean, no.
So your first pornographic debut was in a Showtime softcore series. I guess to explain the genre of softcore, does softcore officially mean that they can't depict the...
No penetration. They don't show penetration.
Okay.
And they don't show an erect penis. That's how the rules work, at least in the United States. No, they can't show penetration. They can't show an erect penis. They can't show a close-up of a vagina, you know, spread open or anything like that.
It's basically
that.
Tits, ass, and the people humping, but that's about it.
Yeah, right. It's like, what did this one comic I saw once a long time ago call it? Because he was talking about how much it sucked going back to his hotel room, and he had this porn on. He called it bobbing hairy man's ass. You know, because that's what you get to see. Some bobbing hairy man's ass, you know.
So,
But there are some things that were produced specifically as softcore. So like for what we call Cinemax, because Cinemax was notorious for having a lot of those. So the first thing I was in was actually a softcore. It was an episode of a softcore series called My First Time.
So you sort of had a preference for couple scenes. So there were certain genres. You had your limitations. There were certain genres you felt uncomfortable.
That I felt comfortable appearing in, which actually weren't reflective of my own taste or how I am alone with somebody. They were couples oriented. So when they talk about features, they say features are couples oriented, even though, you know, when it all is said and done, come on, man, it's mostly guys watching this so they can jack off. But the idea is that a couple together is going to be, at least then they thought, something with some story, you know, something without extreme hardcore sex, you know, choking or, name calling and, you know, things like that. No.
So you obviously would not want a part in a Max Hardcore film.
Oh, no, even in my personal life, that's not my fucking thing. Jesus, is that, that's not my thing. I don't think guys like him hurt the industry, and they cater to a very dark side of human nature, I believe. You know, I mean, there's one, on one hand, everybody talks about freedom and consenting adults and this and that and the other thing. And, as a matter of principle, yes, but let's talk about practice though, you know, really, I don't think it's a positive thing. And the problem is now we have, because of porn being so accessible, you have kids who are growing up and that's their introduction to sex. You know what I'm saying? So how much of a consenting adult are you? How much have you formulated a natural, this is just who I am, you know, set of behaviors and mores when from the time you were 10, you started watching Max Hardcore. You know what I'm saying? I can fuck a kid up. I don't care what anybody says. That's not
should that, that kind I, of I, stuff be illegal?
Well, you know, a lot of them really try to walk the line. You know, they really walk the line with what's considered legal on film. The bottom line is, if you can prove that the girl consented, then it's the letter of the law, and that's really what they try to follow. But I think a lot of girls don't really know totally what they're getting into. I think a lot of these guys will really try to downplay it. Oh, this is just play. It's not the real. You're really not gonna, you know, and all this other thing. And the girl's thinking about the money she's gonna make, you know, and or she doesn't want to be the one to say no. A lot of these guys, a lot of men can be very manipulative. They can be very passive aggressive. Oh, but you agreed. Oh, what am I going to do? I have to finish this scene today. I spent all this money. Oh, please, you're really doing me a favor. Don't let me down. You know what I mean? That kind of sleazy type of manipulation.
Have you talked to the actresses who have been in that kind of stuff?
Not personally. But I heard enough stories. I mean, Jesus, you don't even have to be in the industry to hear stories about that. You can read, you know, accounts from all kinds of people. And none of the people that I ever worked with were like that. They were never like that. They were always, the thing was always, you know, be respectful of the girls, respect people's limits, you know, treat them like human beings. There are some very, very good, kind people in the porn industry. They're not all abusive, manipulative people. There are some people that are very gentle, kind human beings and really care about people, you know. And I saw some of these guys, I mean, if someone was hard, you know, went through something bad or was down on their luck or something like that, they'd help them out, you know, not just so that they could use them later on. And I've even, you know, heard some people, you know, a girl would show up and she'd have a hard time and she'd be crying, she couldn't do it. And, you know, someone took her aside and said, you know, honey, I don't think this is for you. I really don't think this is for you. There are some people that are like that. So you can't paint everybody with the same brush in that industry. As many different personality types as there are in any other walk of life, you have that within the industry as well. You know, it's kind of like Muslims, right?
Yeah.
If the guy's blowing themselves up or getting all the attention. But I know Muslims. I work for Muslims. They're normal people. You know, it's like not everybody who's a Christian, you know, and not everybody who's a Mormon wears magic underwear, right? You know?
Yeah, so. People usually associate the industry with the most extreme aspects.
Because that's what gets the most attention, right? If it bleeds, it leads. A negative thing draw the most attention. But there are other people that they're like family. They really are. A lot of them, they're like family. And you find subgroups within the porn industry and cliques of people who are very much like family. They work together. They appear in each other's stuff. They work, you know, they trust each other. They're supportive of each other. They go to each other's house on Christmas. They go to kids' birthday parties. You know what I'm saying? Just like in any industry, you know? And then there's sleazeballs that like to hang out together too. You know, it's just, you know, birds of a feather, right?
And yeah, I mean, I was listening, I was listening to a Howard Stern interview. It was up on YouTube and he was interviewing a lot of those really extreme guys. So I think Howard Stern is kind of contributing to that image by interviewing them.
Well, he's always catered to people's most prurient interests. We know that, you know, he's very scatologically fascinated. He himself is not that kind of person, but
do you know him?
I think I was on his show. I mean, I don't know him personally, but I was on his show once. And I also wound up doing a pilot for Showtime that he was a co-producer of. And I didn't get the gig because it was a reality show. It was called Etiquette for Outlaws. It was based off of a book that these two guys had written who had appeared on Howard's show a few times. He really liked it. What they did was these two guys decided to write a book about the do's and don'ts in certain subcultures. And they kind of did a George Clinton thing. You know what I mean? They went and explored them themselves. Underground Fight Club, the S&M community, this, that. You know what I'm saying? And so they kind of wrote a how-to manual, you know, where to go, what not to do, the etiquette, the protocol, all those things within that. So it came up that Stern, in conjunction with a company called Pilgrim Films, who produced, I think they produced Ghost Hunters, but a reality film production outfit, decided to do they got a development deal with a spec deal with Showtime to do a pilot, and they announced on a radio station down in LA that they were having an open audition for the host. And some guy I knew, well, because I had a car, basically. He didn't have a car, but he said, yeah, man, me and you should go down there and we should audition, man. So I waited in line with everybody else, and he was all jacked up. He's like, yeah, man, I'm going to get drunk first. I'm going to be a total badass. That's going to be my whole angle. Like, whatever. And I'm like, you know, good luck with that. And they wound up choosing me. And then I guess once Stern found out who it was, he heartily endorsed it. He thought that I was a great choice for it. So, now it didn't get picked up. I mean, unfortunately, as happens a lot in television and the entertainment industry, from between the time that something gets green-lighted for development and the time you hand them the actual finished product, there could be turnover within the company, right? So whoever was responsible and involved in that project is no longer there, so there's no one to fight for it, no one to back it up. The new guys that come in, they want their projects to get done. You know, I always liken it to like when a male lion drives off the alpha of a pride, what does he do? He goes and he kills all his fucking offspring, right? That's what happens in the record industry, that's what happens in television, that's what happens in movies. Very rarely does a project that from someone who got fired or someone who quit get seen through. So that's what wound up happening. But I don't know. The only time I ever met Howard was on it, was when I appeared on his show. So I didn't. And the thing is with any celebrity or anybody, that's not the real person. That's their persona. That's they're doing their act.
So he's different off air.
From what I understand, from everything I've heard, he's a very kind, kind of soft spoken. You know, I mean, in his own words, from what I understand, I mean, I'm no expert on Howard Stern, but he just releases his id on that show, and it's a safe place for him to do it. You know, and he actually gets, you know, but he attracts. I mean, you've heard the callers and things like that. I mean, yeah, what do they have? You know, I mean, he's, you know, where is, you know, creeping contests and, you know, a guy with a big dick is showing it to everybody and people shoving things up their ass. You know, I mean, it's like the kind of stuff that if you were, you know, 12 years old, you'd be like, oh, no, I can't believe this is amazing. But as an adult, personally, I'm like,
I'm not a big Howard Stern fan as an adult, but I was a really big Howard Stern fan when I was like 16 or 17.
Yeah, you outgrew him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. I guess some people haven't, though.
Yeah, I recently interviewed Luke Ford. How influential was Luke Ford's journalism on the industry?
I have no idea. Luke interviewed me, and he was one of the more intelligent, well-spoken, erudite people that I met or had anything to do with in the industry. But I couldn't tell you. I mean, I guess he had a blog and stuff like that. I wasn't up on everything and everyone. So, but I like him, and I like intelligent people who speak well, who are incisive in their questions and you know, thoughtful and, you know, can, you know, aren't afraid to deconstruct things and, you know, speak about them, speak about aspects other than the most obvious and sensational ones. And he was definitely, I felt that he was definitely one of those people. I liked him, but I don't really know. I have no idea what kind of influence he had on the industry.
What he was saying, when I interviewed him, he was saying that a lot of people who get into the porn industry, he says that they lack like human connections to things like family or community. Do you think that observation is accurate?
I think there are some people that are like that, sure, and they're looking for some place to belong, you know, and they find a place. But, you know, that's how that's what makes religions and cults successful too, right? That's what makes multi-level marketing organizations successful. Right? You know, there are a lot of people out there that are looking to belong someplace and that they need an identity and they need to feel cared about, and they need to feel like they belong, and they need to feel like they, you know, they can't, they're afraid to stand on their own, or maybe they've had terrible experiences and they need to feel protected or whatever. But I wouldn't argue with that. There are plenty of people like that in the industry. And then there's a lot of other people that, you know what, they're their own people and they're doing their own thing. They're nice and you work with them and things like that. And they go home at the end of the day. You know what I mean? They're not fully invested in their workplace as being a surrogate family, but you'll see that in every industry. You know what I mean? I went through Est when I was like 18, and then I went through Landmark when I was like 30. And you'll notice there were some people, they just came, they took what they were going to get out of it, and they left. And there were other people, they wanted to be trainers, and they wanted to be part of it, and all that other shit, you know. So,
are some people, would you say a lot of people are traumatized or have long-term psychological problems from being in porn?
Well, I would say the record, the historical record attests to that fact. It doesn't happen to everybody, but some people it does. Yeah, some people have horrible experiences. Some people were very fragile going in, so it was worse for them. They couldn't deal with it. You know, some people, you know, they lost their shit when they got in there, you know. So, yeah, no, there have been people who have committed suicide, people that have come out of it, and now they're born again. And, you know, it definitely runs the gamut. So I wouldn't argue that point at all. Only an idiot would do that. All you got to do is shit. You can just do a search on Google, and you can find, I'm sure, as many stories as you want to read about that. I mean, you got like, what's the most famous one? Linda Lovelace. Jesus Christ. You know?
Have you dated porn actresses, or would that bother you having a girlfriend who's done porn?
I dated one. And she got out of it for a little bit, and then she got into it, and she was different. She was really different. She wasn't your typical porn chick, but you know, knowing that your girlfriend got double penetrated earlier that day is a weird thing for any, you know, I'm sorry, for anybody that still retains some kind of semblance of what we would call normal orientation. Yeah, that wasn't really my thing. So I only did it once.
So
aside from that, I was pretty isolated after.
What was the most sort of extreme thing in porn that you were willing to act in?
Well, there was the most extreme thing that I was ever asked to do, and it didn't work for me. I did a movie for Paul Norman. It was a remake of Devil and Miss Jones. And there was a scene where I was supposed to be like, you know, tied up, and there were two girls, and they were verbally abusing me, and you know, talking about my teeny weeny and all this other fucking shit, and that, you know, that didn't work for me. I'm not oriented that way. The thing is, number one, naturally I'm a dominant. Sexually I'm dominant. So that doesn't cut it. I can't fake that. I can't get off on that at all. Being, you know, even mock, you know, so it took me out of my zone completely.
Do you
and,
mean
you know,
sadomasochism or just sort of dominant?
Well, I guess so. I mean, where does the line come? I wasn't being hurt or anything like that, but I was being humiliated. That, you know, so that wasn't really, that's not my thing. And I don't like being tied up. You know, to me, it's like silly. It's like, you know, if anyone's going to do the tying, it's going to be me. Right? And if anyone's going to wear the blindfold, it's going to be her. You know?
So you have done some S&M porn.
No, that was it as far as that one, was that one scene with Paul.
So you're actually, would you say, by the standards of the porn industry, you're considered relatively straight-laced?
Pretty much, yeah. And the thing was, I wasn't comfortable totally exposing my true sexuality. I wanted to present something, and that was probably part of it. That might have been part of it, too, why I didn't get as much out of it as I could, because it wasn't just me expressing myself sexually. It was more, you know, I wanted to present something that was at least seemed halfway wholesome, because I was out here trying to be acknowledged. I wanted to be acknowledged for it. I wanted to be, I was hoping that I could become something of a male, a good male representative of the industry who got a lot of attention. Not a Ron Jeremy who, you know, is very successful and a great performer and everything like that. But they make fun of him. You know, he's this short little roly-poly hairy Jewish guy, you know, and they call him, they nickname him the Hedgehog, and I think that's why.
Do you know him? Have you met him?
Yeah, I know. I was in a bunch of movies with him. Yeah.
So yeah, you were saying at one point your dream was to be the Orson Welles of porn and to direct and write.
Let me explain that. I did an interview with Reuters, and the guy said, okay, and he basically told me, I need some good quotes here. Here, how about this? You want to be the who of porn? Give me a name of, like, I said, I'm like, how about the George Clooney? He's like, nah. I go, how about the Peter O'Toole? Nah. And I go, how about the Orson Welles? Yeah, there you go. All right, there you go. So you sort of wrote it down. You know what I'm saying? So that was cultivated. That wasn't, you know. I mean, I thought maybe I could, you know, because that's how you make money in the industry. You don't make money as a, you know, just as a performer. How you make money is when you get into directing and owning your own line and things like that. And, you know, and I entertained those thoughts. But, you know, as I started, you know, being not crazy about the work, what I liked was the acting. It turned out, you know, I'd never acted before, but I was good at it, you know, and I enjoyed it. And what I found was that the sex started seeming like a chore, you know, and the acting was, I started looking forward to the acting. It's funny because with a lot of the people in the industry, directors and things like that, they really kind of are frustrated, you know, directors. They want to make movies, you know. So it's kind of like the sex. They're like, yeah, whatever. Okay, time to change positions. Let's go to reverse cowgirl, you know, whatever.
So needs,
but they really
you said there
it.
Needs to be more creativity because a lot of the plot lines are not that well written in a lot of cases.
Well, the guy that I mostly worked with and who really gave me my chance was a director and writer named Cash Markman. And he was into his movies. And he wrote some good scripts. Some genuinely funny, charming, cool scripts. Now, he had written for television under his real name, which I won't say. But he had written for some television shows and things like that. And he was into making movies. But this was how he made his living, too, though. So there's the realities of it. You know, you got it's, you know, as much as you're trying to make a good movie, you're making it for somebody else to sell, you know. And if you're an independent director, then, you know, this is what they want and this is what they're buying from. You know, it's something for guys to jack off to. So you're always going to be hindered by that. And you're also going to be hindered by the available talent. You know, and he loved working with me because I was a good actor. And I was into the acting, and a lot of porn guys, it's like when they have to be in features, they're really not into it. They're not into acting. They're not good acting. They're not good actors, you know, so they don't put a lot into it, and they don't have a lot to put into it either. So people like that, what I found was I became I became kind of a go-to guy. Hey, we need a good actor for this. You know, we need guys, you know, and they would come to me. So even when I started having, you know, when it turned out that, you know, I wasn't the most reliable sexual performer in the world. I mean, like Cash was one. He goes, you know what? He goes, you do the softcore, and he goes, and then we'll edit in a stunt cock. And that's what they call it.
You don't need to be erect for the softcore stuff.
No, you're simulating it. Although there were a couple of times when they wanted me to do softcore, and the girl and I were so turned on that it was hardcore. They just didn't show it. it just happened. And they're like, hey, you know what? This is great because, you know, it looks, these are two turned on people. So even though it's softcore, you still want, you know, you want verisimilitude, you know, so. But yeah, when it comes to softcore, now you're not even penetrating. You don't have to be erect or anything like that. And if it is a softcore production, a lot of times what they do is they have you put a sock over your dick. You know, so there are some people that have only ever done softcore. You know, they're like models and things like that. But a lot of those guys that were doing softcore, they liked using people that did hardcore better because they were better at simulating the sex. It seemed much more realistic. I mean, when you got a girl who is used to actually having penetrative sex, she can fake the sex a lot better just because she has more experience doing it, where you get some model-y type, you know, and she's like going, ooh, ah, it's just like, you're not getting fucked. You know, who are you trying to kid, right?
What are the biggest changes in the industry that have happened since you left?
What I've noticed, it's all dependent upon access, which Adam Smith, the noted economist, economic philosopher, said that that's kind of the downfall of every industry is access. So what wound up happening is since really what it boils down to is we're making pornography for guys to masturbate to. Once technology got to the point where anybody can get a cheap camera, I mean, you can use a cell phone now, Jesus, and everybody has access to the internet, then it started really cutting into DVD sales. And there's still a market for cable, you know, for the pay-per-view and stuff, but I honestly couldn't tell you how severely that's been affected.
Maybe,
but
I think what it is a lot of people find it more comfortable to lie in their bed and masturbate than to be on a laptop.
Yeah, sure. Well, you can do what I do, and I have my computer HDMI cable to my big screen TV, and I actually don't even have cable. I get all my TV shows for free off the internet, and all the commercials have been edited out, and I can watch them anytime I want. I can pause it, and I can rewind it, and I can do all that other shit. So, yeah, so I've got a setup like that, and then I have a wireless mouse and keyboard, and there you go.
So you're
not everybody.
You're still turned on by porn. I would think you would be pretty bored by it. Bored of it.
No, not really. You know, I mean, I like, you know, I mean, I'm not like a porn fan, but yeah, I watch porn, you know, I watch it there, you know, for inspiration, you know, and jerk off, right? Yeah, that's what it's for. Now, what I find that I like more, though, and I think that this is symptomatic of how the industry has changed, I prefer seeing something that I think is real. You know what I mean? That looks, that the people are into what they're doing, and it's not all orchestrated and directed and, you know, lit and things like that. You know, it's about, you know, you want to put yourself into the scene. You know what I mean? It's a vicarious thing. So you want to imagine that you're the one there. And if I'm going to imagine something, then I want to imagine that I'm this guy that's with this chick that's really into me fucking her. You know, and that's not always the case. It's not always real. I mean, if they're on a spaceship, you know, or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
I know there's
that's
a lot. I think at Showtime they have like the softcore series that takes place in a spaceship, and there's all this telepathic stuff. And
Yeah, and I don't know. Maybe that's for people that are just a little bit not, you know, they're not quite comfortable with, you know, hardcore porn or whatever. I don't know. Obviously, there's still a market for it to keep making those things, you know, but I mean, they don't make, you know, they don't have huge budgets and they don't make a lot of money, you know, but I do know that a lot of my movies and a lot of movies still, one of the revenue streams is you sell the cable licensing to different regions and areas. So it's like, you know, when I, you know, in Canada, you know, I'm a permanent resident of Canada. I got recognized a couple of times because people had seen me on cable there. And up there, the laws are different. They show penetration on cable porn, you know, and in Canada. They just can't show cum shots is all.
Can they show stuff like that on pay-per-view porn?
Pay-per-view, you can. Yeah, they'll show full on edited hardcore. Yeah, because I think the thing is there, it's like, you know, you're specifically saying this is what I want to watch when you make that purchase. So there isn't the opportunity for somebody, you know, to go, oh, I was watching and this came on and I'm just, you know, disgusted by it. But, you know, I think it might be kind of arbitrary. They had all these rules, you know, it's like for U.S. porn. I mean, they you know, the girl's vagina couldn't take up more than a certain percentage of the screen and this and that and the other thing. But, you know, whatever. It's different countries. I mean, shit, I have this one fan, she's Russian. She saw me on cable in Russia late night. And, you know, so that's kind of cool. And I had some fans in Australia. And they thought, oh, Mike, it's so fucking funny. Well, I was like, hey, so goddamn funny. They're a great people, man. They're a lot of fun. They're like, hey, it was fucking hilarious. Whereas in the U.S., it's like, yeah, man, we shoved that girl's face in the toilet. You know, there's this mean streak in Americans, man. I'm telling you.
So you would say most of the porn that's really kind of abusive and sadistic, is it from America or some other countries as well?
I don't know enough to be able to say that. I'm sure it's from every country. I mean, we all know that the Germans are definitely into their fucking S&M fetishes, you know what I'm saying? But
or
I
in
just,
Japan,
you know,
the Japanese have a thing called a gokan.
Is that where they're to, like, animal entrails and shit?
No, gokan is where it's a Japanese fetish where a bunch of guys jerk off into cups and a woman drinks it.
Oh, it's like bukkake. Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, I was in porn, but I'm not enough of an expert to be able to tell you, you know, it's like porn around the world, you know, like a food critic or something. I honestly couldn't tell you.
So you left the industry after the AIDS scare.
Yeah, and that wasn't why I left. What I would liken it to is like when someone's in a relationship with somebody and they want to get out of it and they're just looking for them to do something that they can express exaggerated outrage over, so they can then say I had an excuse, and it's kind of a chicken shit way. But I, you know, that way I was kind of able to save face. But the thing was, emotionally it became difficult for me, and I wasn't the most reliable performer. I got to one point where it started. For various reasons. I mean, human sexuality is a very complicated thing. You know what I mean? Even with, you know, Viagra or Cialis, you're not guaranteed an erection, you know? And what I found is that there were times when I would be like, just not into it, or I was distracted by something else in my life, you know? Oh, great. I got to fucking get my car fixed. You know, how am I going to pay for, you know? So I'm thinking about that, and I was out of the moment. So,
are there times when they expect you to, like, ejaculate, like, four times in a row?
Well, they will only expect a guy to do that if the guy can do that, and the guy says he can do that. But nobody ever expected that. I mean, generally speaking, they figure, you know, your average guy is good for a pop in a day. But, I mean, I knew other guys, though. They're like, hey, man, no problem. I can do two, three, you know, whatever. Depends on who you are. You know, but they never demand that of you. Now, there may be guys that only hire guys that can do that. Because, I mean, hey, how great is that, right? I can fucking shoot, you know, three scenes with the same guy in one day, you know. It's all about economics. It's all about, you know, the guy who can do the job.
So the AIDS scare, did it have somewhat of an impact on you leaving?
No, it was my way out. I wasn't worried about it. I didn't move in those circles where it was really a risk for me. And I'm sure you're aware the industry is regulated by AIM, the Adult Industry Medical Foundation. So, you know, we all had to follow their protocols or we didn't work. You know, you had to have your test. I had to have a test that was, you know, no more than, you know, that was, you know, a negative test from within the last 28 days and things like that. And the chances of a guy getting AIDS are from heterosexual sex are to my understanding, medically, I mean, it's just because it has to be introduced directly into the blood. So there are very, very few instances of a man, you know, contracting HIV through heterosexual, unprotected heterosexual.
But there are actors who are crossovers. They do gay and straight porn.
Well, from what I understand, one of the how at that time, you know, and this is just what I heard, there was a guy who was responsible for infecting the other two or three other girls, and he had just come back from Brazil, and he was doing tranny porn where he was letting them fuck him in the ass, and it was unprotected. And I guess in Brazil, it's easy to buy a fake test, you know, that says you're negative. There's people that'll do that. You know, it's not as, you know, it's not as by the book as it is here. You don't have, I mean, AIM is really, really did a lot for the industry as far as protecting the performers and giving people a comfort zone, things like that. So to be perfectly honest, I wasn't worried about it. one thing that I was worried about was, great, if everything goes over to condoms, then I'm going to be really fucked, because if I have performance problems with unprotected sex, you can just imagine what it is wearing a fucking condom. You know, I only did ever did like maybe 4 condom scenes in my whole career.
And
you, know,
you
and
left,
that,
did you leave before that ballot measure passed or required condoms?
Oh, yeah, way before. Yeah, I left way before. I wanted out. I wanted out, and I wanted to do it with my, you know, my masculinity intact, so to speak. So, yeah, it was kind of a chicken shit way to do it. It was like, God, how am I going to get out of this? I don't fucking know. I'm sorry, I can't do this anymore. It's just not safe. There you go. Thank you. You know, but I got to tell you, though, one of the girls that got wound up getting AIDS, I kind of went out with. So that was kind of, that was a little close to home. This really just adorable little Czech girl. We never wound up screwing, but we, you know, we went out to dinner a couple times and things like that. And she was just a sweetheart and just absolutely adorable. So that was that. So when I heard that, I was kind of like, wow, maybe, you know, that, I don't know, maybe it wasn't such a bad thing. When I had fun, I had fun. Don't get me wrong. There were some times where it was great. I mean, there were some times where, I mean, the girl and I, you know, who I was going to be performing with, were fucking naked out and going down on each other and stuff for 3 hours before we even did our scene. But that was the exception to the rule. I couldn't just turn it on and turn it off like that, you know.
So now you're done with porn. What do you see yourself doing in the future?
Well, I work a straight gig, which I'd rather not talk about. I, you know, keep my privacy in that respect. But I work a straight gig, and I've got a couple of things I'm doing. But I've worked in the same industry for about 8 years now, for a living. And I live a normal life. There's a couple of things I'm working on. I want to, you know, kind of keep private. But what I see myself doing is, you know, I mean, no plant survives first contact with the enemy. So regardless of what I would like to do or anything that I'm working on that I would like to see turn into something, what I know that I want to do is just make sure that I just don't want to die, you know, homeless, penniless and alone. You know, I mean, to me, I don't need that much. I've never really felt I needed to prove anything in that.
So you don't need to have some like big celebrity legacy.
No. And you know something? People really don't get it. There's so many people that just think the greatest thing they could ever be is celebrity, and they don't understand. I mean, I've really learned to value my privacy. I've really learned that's important to me. I've learned that there are times I only want the attention when I want it. Otherwise, I want to be left alone, you know. And letting people into your life and exposing yourself, and you just see everybody doing it. I mean, you see kids on YouTube. I mean, every time they eat a sandwich or take a shit, they're talking about it on their Facebook pages and on YouTube and stuff. And it's like the narcissism is just beyond belief. And the thing is, and I'm sure you've noticed this, regardless of who you are or how great something is that you've done, if you're getting attention about it, for a lot of people, it's just an opportunity to try to vent their spleen all over you. You know what I mean? So it doesn't matter who it is. Fuck this guy. He's about bullshit. You know, you could have saved a busload of children. He wouldn't even. The only reason he did that is because he thinks he's going to, you know, get attention or someone's going to pay him money. I mean, there's no way around it. So when you open yourself up like that, the idea that a lot of people these have is everybody's going to think I'm so great. No, everybody's not, man. It doesn't matter how great you actually are. It doesn't matter how wonderful what you've done is or how good it is. There's going to be a significant number of people that all they're going to do is shit all over you because that's what they do. And with the internet now, they can do it freely and with anonymity and with impunity, whereas you really couldn't before. The first haters, I think, well, it started off with graffiti. Johnny's a fag. You know what I mean? Then when I really saw it, and I noticed on Stern, the radio talk show caller, there you are, your face is not seen, nobody knows your real name, and you're just on hold waiting so you can bag on that person that's on the air. You think you're so fucking great, blah, 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 and that's what they do. And on Stern is the worst when it comes to that. But like conservative talk radio, anything like that. That's what you get, you know, no matter how you try to screen people. And some of them will cut the guy off right away, but Stern, they love it, you know. So, I mean, when I was on Stern, I mean, Jesus, you know, you've got these trolls that are digging on a hole for hours, and it's not doing anything to improve the disposition, right? So by the time they finally get on there, they just want to try to lay into you. Now, fortunately, most of them are just fucking idiots, and I used it as an opportunity. I mean, there was one woman who started yelling at me, some old bag, and she goes, how does it feel to be a blah, blah, blah? I said, how does it feel to be a walking yeast infection? And she's just like, oh, 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 and then, you know, I cracked up everybody in the room. One guy comes in, one guy calls in, he's all, yeah, you think you're so great, I could do porn if I wanted to. I said, why don't you want to? He said, what? I go, you said you could do porn if you want to. Why don't you want to? Are you a fag? You know, I started going, hey, what are you, a fag? You know, and so, you know, I gave as good as I got, but, you know, that was just, I mean, that's what the show was about, right? So, but to me, the internet is that magnified exponentially. And you've seen it anywhere you go. It doesn't matter what the story is. It doesn't matter what the story is. Trayvon Martin. Oh my God. You know what I mean? An unarmed kid gets killed by some fucking asshole walking down the street to see his dad carrying some Skittles and an iced tea. And then there's immediately people jumping in there. Yeah, well, I'm sure he did something, this, that, and the other thing. It's like, dude, why? It's just, there's too much opportunity for people to do bad things. There's too much opportunity for people to be mean, you know, and all their frustrations, all their insecurities, all their disenfranchisement. Now they have a way to do it. And it's like carte blanche has now been given, because what's reality TV for the most part? It's humiliation. You know, it's humiliation. People want to see somebody fail. They want to see somebody lose. They want to see somebody be made an asshole of, you know, and, so celebrity it's not what the uninitiated think. And it takes a rare type of, it takes an enormous amount of self-absorption to be able to be a successful celebrity, because you have to be about you all the time. And I get tired of me. You know what I mean? I can't be about me all the time. I can't just talk about me all the time. You know, I'll talk about me when I feel like talking about me. Otherwise, I want to.
Would you say a lot of narcissists get into porn?
Of course, a lot of narcissists, a lot of insecure people. There were some definite types among the guys that I saw. Some of the guys were hate fuckers. They're misogynists. Some of the guys were like the dumbest, stupid bonehead jock that you knew in high school. Yeah, man, look at this shit, blah, blah, blah. And great performers, but dumber than shit. There were some guys that were really needy, that were weird. There was this one guy, I'm not going to say his name, and he was a nice fucking guy, but man, okay, we did a movie, and once, you know, the director, you know, we were prepared, you know, because I tell the guys, hey, man, if I can't do it, you better have a guy standing by who can do the penetration. And so there was another guy that was working on the movie, and the director asked the girl, you know, said, okay, how about this guy? And she said, no, I don't want to work with him, because it's up to the girl. It really is. She says, no, she'll tell you who she wants to work with. This guy was so bummed out. He took it so personally. I remember he was sitting, it was sad. I felt so sorry for him. I walked out of the parking lot where, you know, where the soundstage was, you know, some little industrial, light industrial area in the valley. And it's at night, and I look over and I see the light on in a truck, in a pickup truck, and this guy's sitting in there and he's listening to Robin Trower, Bridge of Sighs, and he's smoking a hash out of his pipe and he's just totally bummed, you know? And so there are some guys that are like that. They're really kind of needy and creepy. And I mean, there was, not creepy in it, like he's an asshole or anything, but it was kind of, you know, it was kind of uncomfortable, you know? So, and then there's some guys that were just a pro all the way. Yeah, how you doing? All right. When do you want it? Do you want my dick to get hard? Boom, there it's hard. What would you like me to do with it? Do you want me to pop? There you go. Bam, pop. Do you want me to pop again? You know what I'm saying? And they're just, you know, preternatural in that sense. And then there's some guys that were just real fucking arrogant, macho assholes, like bodybuilder type. you know, used to be a bouncer, rides motorcycles, this, that. There was this one asshole. I was riding, we were going to do a second unit scene someplace. So, you know, they're shooting at the soundstage, and then the director sends me off with a production assistant, a guy running the camera, and another guy, we're going to do a dialogue scene somewhere. And the production assistant and I were in the car as we're driving, and we're both into like Star Trek and science fiction and stuff like that. So we're talking about stuff, you know, we're geeks. Yeah, man, that's just, yeah, man, I really want to see you, but yeah, man, I really like Star Wars, this, that, and the other thing. And the fucking, this one guy's all, oh, man, somebody shoot me now. Can you guys shut up? I was like, you know what? Fuck you. Seriously, fuck you. Fuck your tattoos. Fuck your steroids. You know? Fuck your reverse curve fucking dick. Fuck you. You know? The coolest people I met were just cool people, and there were a lot of those, and I got along great with them. And we were always happy to see each other. You know, we'd take a break. Hey, man, hey, Dick, you want to go on? I got some good weed. Yeah, man. Cool. Let's go, you know. You know, so how you been, man? Or we talk about a movie we saw. Yeah, I want to go see that. Yeah, you know, and just like any other thing. But, yeah, there's some, you know, to be honest, I never met anybody like me that was also a performer. Not one. I got one really good friend, Tony Tedeschi. He's not in the business anymore. Still a very, very good friend of mine.
So you would not...
Told you.
If you met someone who was interested in getting in the industry, would you advise against it?
No, but I would tell him, I would tell him, you know, you need to manage your expectations. Because until you've tried it, you don't know if you can even do it. Number one. You know what I mean? It's really, it's nothing that you can say, oh, I can definitely do that. Guarantee it. For a guy, all a woman needs is an unobstructed orifice, right? That's basically it. You know, something that, you know, a hole you can shove something in. But a guy, you got to have an erection. And there are no guarantees. There are no guarantees, not even pharmaceutically. There are no guarantees. So that what I would tell them is just manage your own expectations, you know? And what do you want out of it? And you're going to find out what you're comfortable with and what you're not comfortable with. And, you know, that's it. I wouldn't try to talk anybody out of it. And now if they had if she had unrealistic expectations, I would try to talk her out of it. I'd say, honey, you know what? You really don't. I mean, it's going to change everything in your life. It's going to change everything. And it's not like it used to be, because nowadays, anything you do potentially can last forever. It's out there and it could be there forever. 20 fucking years from now, long after you decided this wasn't for you and you're trying to have a normal life and you're trying to be a school teacher. Hello? We've heard that story more than once or twice, right? You know, and then some fucking kid finds a school teacher on a fucking porn site, and then he fucking emails the link to all his friends, and suddenly you got all these fucking eighth graders. You know, they're like, yeah, teacher, you're sorry, she fucking sucking a guy's dick. You know what I mean? So you gotta bear that in mind. You may be done with your past, but your past ain't always done with you. And something like this, you know, it could last forever.
So that would be
the caveat I offer.
I'd like to thank Dick Smothers for being on the show.
I would like to thank Robert Stark for being interested enough in me to call me and interview me.
That's all we have for today's show. So take care, and we'll be back with you next time.